Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. On today's show, we're talking film, and joining me in the studio to take us through today's trio, which includes A Grieving Husband, set on destruction, a Portuguese anthology musing on modern life, and of course, spandex-clad superheroes, is David Jenkins, editor of Little White Lies magazine. All that ahead here on the Monocle Arts Review. We're going to kick things off today with Demolition, a new drama by Jean-Marc Vallée that sees Jake Gyllenhaal take up the role of Davis, a successful banker who's just lost his wife in a car crash. The film follows his unraveling as he tries to grieve for his wife and his marriage. Let's hear a clip.
Dear Champion Vending Company, I put 5 quarters in your machine and proceeded to push B2, which should have given me peanut M&Ms. Regrettably, it did not. I found this upsetting as I was very hungry, and also my wife had died 10 minutes earlier. I'm not saying that was your fault.
I just want to be thorough. Julia was a good person.
She worked with special needs children.
She snorted when she laughed. Other than that, I don't think I knew who she really was.
And we were just listening to a clip from the film Demolition, starring Jake Gyllenhaal. And I think perhaps you have to set up the storyline a little bit more for us.
Well, I mean, yeah, as you heard from that clip, I mean, it has Jake Gyllenhaal as this kind of grieving husband who, in the pretty much the first scene of the film, he's having this kind of petty squabble with his wife in a car, and then they're not concentrating, and then kaboom. And the film is essentially his slightly bizarre reaction to the situation, which is kind of kicked off by this correspondence with a vending machine company, but then which escalates and escalates, and he kind of becomes obsessed with auto-destructing his own life, if you will. And that kind of takes on many bizarre forms, and he actually looking back at the nature of his relationship with his wife and actually trying to understand what it was he loved about her, and also trying to move on to meet new people. And one of the subplots of the film is that the house that the pair lived in, he decides that he has this line about to really know something, you have to take it apart. And so he physically takes apart all the kind of electronic items and appliances in their house and sledgehammers the walls down and wants to sort of just turn this house into dust so we can kind of understand what it is he's been doing for his life.
Jake Gyllenhaal is one of my favorite actors. I think he's very versatile. How does he play this character?
Well, I think this is Jake Gyllenhaal is quite a weird one for me, because I think that there was a period a couple of years ago where it felt like he was doing a bit of a Leonardo DiCaprio, where there was every performance was this "love me, I won an award" kind of a performance, and it kind of, I think it peaked with that film, that boxing film he did called Southpaw, where he kind of really bulked up and, you know, he'd done all the physical training behind becoming a boxer. And this actually is a lot less awardsy, I think, but actually internal, a lot more of an enjoyable, relaxed, louche performance. And I think it shows that he's actually quite a natural comic actor rather than a sort of, you know, good at the big dramatic melodrama stuff that he was doing before.
The film was directed by Jean-Marc Vallée. What's his background?
Well, he actually is a kind of a bit himself also a bit of an awards darling, which, going against what I've just said, it kind of makes you think maybe that's why Gyllenhaal wanted to work with him, because he had won Matthew McConaughey an Oscar for the Dallas Buyers Club, and Reese Witherspoon was nominated for an Oscar for Wild, which he did, about Cheryl Strayed, the drug addict who goes on a long walk. And maybe Vallée is someone who's got this reputation of, oh, he's great with actors, he wins people awards, he brings out these big performances, he kind of edits them and plants them in this way that actually resonates with the awards bodies. But this film had a kind of a strange thing happen for this film, where it premiered in the fall festival, so around October, November last year, and the studio releasing it kind of made this statement saying that they weren't going to be releasing it for kind of awards contention. It was not going to be in the Oscar race. Well, I don't know why you would make that statement, to be honest, but I think it might have been something to do with the fact that, you know, comparing it to all these other big awards contenders might make it seem like less a film than it is. I actually think among kind of, you know, hardcore cinephile types, I think Vallée isn't someone who is that well liked. He kind of strays more towards mainstream taste, I think.
But the film we're seeing?
But I think this film is actually one of his, this is one of his better ones. There is definitely some kind of corny self-help kind of bromide-y kind of things happening. And, you know, you don't, you know, I can't, don't want to say, but there is a sort of like maybe leave the cinema 5 minutes before the end moment because it's so unbearably corny that it doesn't, you don't quite understand how it fits with the film. But other than that, yeah, just watching Jake Gyllenhaal with a sledgehammer is very pleasing.
Well, there you go. Off to see it. Demolition opened last year at the Toronto International Film Festival and is out now in the USA, Hong Kong and the UK. The latest installment of Portuguese director Miguel Gomes's trilogy that muses on modern Portugal has just been released in the UK. It's called Arabian Nights Volume 2, The Desolate One. David, can you set up the premise of these three films?
Ooh, okay, I'll try.
What are they based on loosely?
Well, you have this Portuguese director called Miguel Gomes, and he is something of a maverick. He's got a very wry, dry sense of humour, and he's kind of, as he's making films, he's also deconstructing the films as they're being made, if you can kind of catch my drift. But
sort of.
So with this film, he took a year out and he assembled a team of journalists, and their task was to look at news stories happening from around the country that were kind of springing from the austerity measures that had been imposed on Portugal. And the stories that were deemed interesting enough, he then went out and produced little kind of, you know, short films about them. And this trilogy is essentially a kind of big portmanteau of all these little short films, which he sort of states at the beginning of each episode, this is not a kind of adaptation of the, you know, Arabian Nights, but this is inspired by its structure.
So, and I suppose it's the, like, the fables, the modern fairy tales.
Exactly,
really.
They are intent. Yeah, I mean, you do have a kind of Scheherazade character who is kind of telling these tales to the Shah, but, you know, instead of it being, you know, Aladdin, it's these very kind of weird tales about a dog, a kind of magical dog in a housing estate. And there's one about, it's a sort of bizarre trial, which kind of is like a kind of theatre production that where they're trying to work out a crime, and the buck is being passed among many, many different people. And
well, let's have a little listen to see what this kind of film sounds like.
Escuta, ó venturoso rei. Fui sabedora de que é triste país entre os países, onde assomavam as ruínas e o povo andava à míngua. Chegaram bem montados três mercadores muito ricos. Tinham ali vindo a pedido dos governantes arruinados.
A clip from the second volume of the Portuguese series Arabian Nights. Now, I gather this second part is, and you can hear it there, it's much more sort of melancholy and sad, perhaps, than the first and the third that bracket it.
I mean, yeah, I guess so. I mean, they all mix kind of melancholy humour. I think it would be hard to sort of say one is different from the other. I think that definitely the intention is that you can watch any of them at any time and in any order. I mean, there's no real set through line. There's maybe like one or two characters who pop up again, but, you know, there's no kind of overarching narrative. It's not like Star Wars where, you know, you can't watch The Empire Strikes Back without seeing the second one. So, like,
I was reading one review and it says that Gomez, the director, blurs the boundary between, or some people think that he blurs the boundary between fiction and documentary, but really what he's doing is blurring the boundary between literal and metaphorical. But is it just too obscure for an audience? Is it too bizarre? Is there anything to hold on to?
No, I think obscure is definitely the wrong word for it, because what it is definitely not something that's pejorative. It's magical. It's mystical. It's something that you maybe won't understand, but you'll be able to see that it's instantly that it's very beautiful. I think that one of the things that characterizes this film and all of the films that he's made in the past is that he's a director who, even though he has this kind of facade of humor and he's kind of quite self-lacerating in some ways. There's a bit at the beginning of the first film where he features and is ahead of making the film, and he kind of runs away from his crew because he's scared at the prospect of doing this huge epic. But at the same time, you watch this film and it's made out of from a sense of pure empathy. I mean, he wants to understand people, he wants to meet people, he wants to see what makes people tick, he wants to see how people survive. You know, he feels terrible for his country, and although the film isn't a kind of political film or a protest film, it's a film that he wants to sort of, it's a kind of gift to his country, I think, and yeah, it's wonderful. I mean,
you've won me over. I'm going to go. Yeah. And anyone else out there, Arabian Nights Volume 2, The Desolate One, premiered at the Cannes Film Festival last year and is out now in the UK and will hit Brazil next month. And tune in to last week's edition of The Cinema Show for our interview with the director, Miguel Gomez. Now, summer blockbuster season is just around the corner, and kicking things off is one of the many superhero movies that will be taking over our screens in the coming months. Captain America: Civil War sees Chris Evans take on the role of the superhero, and he's joined by a host of other Marvel favourites such as Black Widow, Spider-Man and Iron Man 2. Now, David, like, how many characters is he plundering for this version of the film?
Well, I think that this film, I think one of its merits is that it manages to have hundreds of characters, but it does give them a little bit of, you know, you get to spend a little bit of time with everyone. It's a bit more like I don't want to say this and be misquoted, but it is a bit more like a kind of Robert Altman film than a sort of, you know, destructo buildings falling over every 5 seconds kind of movie.
Let's hear a clip from the film, Captain America: Civil War.
This doesn't have to end in a fight, Tony.
You just started a war. Stay down. Final warning.
I could do this all day.
A clip from the latest Marvel comic feature film, Captain America: Civil War. Now, someone's quoted as saying it's soap opera in spandex. What do you make of that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the inference for that is that it's kind of warm and cuddly. And it's like, you know, these movies, I think, are a bit like a kind of geodesic dome that you go and you can be happy and you can be safe. It's a safe space in the cinema. The visuals and the visual language and the dialogue and the characters, they're all so familiar. They are like old friends. Even if it's a new story or you're getting a new character in the mix, it all just feels like The Archers with spandex.
And we see the return of Robert Downey Jr., but I gather guilt-ridden. How does this play out in this series?
Well, I mean, it's slightly strange setup. I mean, the setup is that it's essentially Downey Jr.'s Iron Man versus Chris Evans' Captain America. They have this kind of imposition where they have to decide whether they want to be policed by a body, a governed body, democratically elected, or they should be allowed to do their own thing and fight for freedom where they decide that they should fight for freedom. And it is essentially a kind of democracy versus fascism argument, and Iron Man is on the side of democracy. He wants people to govern him and tell him what to do and keep him on a bit of a leash a bit, I think. And it's strange because you'd think that would be the sort of, you know, the sane, liberal, rational option. But actually, no, he's the baddie of the piece. Actually, I think maybe one of the other interesting things about the film is that there is no baddie in the film. There is no baddie. It's like a kind of, it's just a discussion of people with different views, and you know, it's, you have to come on and decide how you fit into the argument, I guess. I mean, which is kind of strange for a Marvel movie.
Tell us a little bit about the franchise, you know, in terms of its, you know, financial blockbuster success in the past, and you know, whether its future, can it keep carrying on plundering the Marvel comic books?
Well, I think that this one is going to prove key, because I mean, it's had quite incredible reviews since it's previewed, and I suspect that it will make stupid money, and that will obviously be the kind of catalyst for a lot more of these movies. And I mean, the studios that release them have kind of it's part of this thing called the Marvel Cinematic Universe, MCU, if you're in the know, and they have the kind of the future penciled out, where, you know, 10, 20 years into advance. So we know when the next Captain America movie is going to be. We know when the next Iron Man, the next Avengers, the next Black Panther, you know. And then you have all these little side, you know, you have the sequel to Ant-Man, and you have the sequel, you know, another Spider-Man movie. So it's just going to keep going and spreading, and like a kind of, you know, a big virus.
There you go.
Movie virus.
Well, Captain America is out now and rolling out across cinemas all around the world, which brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to my guest, David Jenkins. You've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian Tobias. The show was produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time on Monday, when we'll be discussing the New York art scene with Charlotte Burns from The Art Newspaper. But for now, goodbye for me, and thanks so much for listening.